This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and it is a fabulous Willamette Valley day as usual. This is where we spend your noon hour every Monday through Friday talking about local institutions, ideas, initiatives, individuals, all that good stuff, and keep you informed as to what you need to know in the Salem-Keizer area and the greater Marion and Polk County. And to that, today we have a guest in the studio again today, and this one's from Marion County, and he is in charge of making sure that Marion County is prepared at best its ability for emergencies. As a matter of fact, Ed Flick, his title is literally Emergency Manager. Marion County Emergency Manager. Welcome to the studio, Ed.
Hey, thanks for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this stuff.
That is a big umbrella when you say... Hey, Ed, prepare us for an emergency. I mean, how many things, what's on the top of the list, and how many things are you tasked to try to see that the county government, and citizens are prepared for?
There's a lot of ways that the community here could be impacted, and we bend those up. There's natural hazards, and of course, in the Willamette Valley, we think first of flooding, and actually walking in, I was hearing stories about how Keizer was affected by the 96 flood. There's also earthquakes, which I think if you haven't heard about the Cascadia earthquake by now, you really need to.
Yeah, you probably just moved here.
You probably just moved here. So, you know, we have winter storms and ice storms and wind storms. You know, I was at Western Oregon years ago in college, and there's a big story about how they lost a really iconic tree. And so things big and small, natural, but also drought. You know, since I've been here back home in Oregon for 4.5 years, we've seen drought, we've seen flood, we've seen windstorm, ice storm, even small earthquakes. Wildland fire now is a reality in the Western Cascades. But then there's also technological things that are hazards that we need to think about. And chief among those, hazardous material incidents. You know, our economy depends on the transportation of hazardous materials to do things that are important to us. Processing food, for example.
That might be compressed gas. That might be flammable liquids.
Right.
That could be, so, we get a lot of radioactive material in the valley, but.
Not a lot of radioactive material, but certainly things that support really important industries that are cornerstones of our economy. We need to take prudent measure to be prepared for hazmat incidents. Things that also are contemporary. I mean, cybersecurity is an issue that is facing us nationally. And I heard from some partners recently how local industries and governments are challenged by cyber events. So, and then of course, it's also true that there's human caused incidents. You know, there's a phenomenon of violent attack that's occurring in our country that institutions like schools and other places have to think about. So we try and look at all of those things, but the good news is there's some capabilities that if you build them, they'll help you see through any of them. So what we use in our industry is called the all hazards approach. We do try and understand all of the threats and hazards that may present, and then we think about the context, or in other words, how they would impact our communities, and then what we can do for those specific things. And we do that very deliberately every year. In fact, the last 2 years, in February, we've had a bunch of people come out to the Keizer Civic Center and help us explore those issues. We call it the Threat and Hazard Identification Risk Assessment, and it's the cornerstone of our process and how we understand what those threats and hazards are to us, and then work on what we can do. So last year we had over 120 people there, had a good local business provide us a great lunch, and we spent an 8-hour day thinking about that.
That's great. So you're saying basically you're trying to create an infrastructure and a response type of action and sequence of events so that no matter what the emergency is, there's a response. There's some infrastructure in place, either in protocol or communications, right?
There's communications and there's process. But I'd say that the thing that's even more important than those things are partnerships. Government simply cannot respond to emergencies and disasters alone. And it's so important that we think about how we can become more prepared and respond and recover from things as a whole community. And that sounds like a bumper sticker, but the whole community to me is literally exactly what it says. You know, we have to work with not only all the other public institutions that play a big role and have legal responsibilities, but also all of the private partners, both in our voluntary organizations like the Red Cross, Salvation Army, but also businesses. The vast majority of work every day in our communities are done by private enterprise, mm-hmm. and they're critical partners to us to be able to minimize the effects of these things.
All right, so I usually think of these fat, juicy disasters like the Cascadia event, which it's going to be. One, I am convinced that it's going to happen in my lifetime, right? Certainly in my kid's lifetime, if not mine, but it's going to happen. It's going to be monumental. So, and we were talking before the show started, Dave, about the responsibility of citizens to do their own preparedness.
Sure, you have to have an emergency kit standing by for anything.
And we are going to dive into what people can do, should do, need to have during the show.
But absolutely.
So I've got all these questions, you know, when all the mud hits the fan.
Right.
And you're talking about the Red Cross and the City of Salem and, of course, first responders and the county and the coordination and public works and all these things. My first question is, what's in place to decide how to communicate? Because we may not have cell signal, we may not have electricity. What's the communication amongst, in cooperation amongst these groups so that it doesn't just go crazy?
Yeah.
So being able to communicate is fundamental.
Sure.
And I was talking about communication with a partner when I walked in here, and I'm going to leave here and go have a meeting with another partner and talk about multi-NC coordination and communication systems. So the reality is, in most circumstances, our radio communications and internet are going to be tools that we can use. I think that broadcast radio plays a really important part in how we communicate to the public. But we also need to think about how do we communicate when those systems aren't available. And so one of the key foundational elements of our plan is amateur radio. So in the county, we have just a great bunch of volunteers who are able to use amateur radio and help us communicate with our public and private partners. The Auxiliary Communications Unit, they're Marion County volunteers. And so that's a key piece of this. And people will tell you over and over, looking back at disasters, how important amateur radio was.
Now, when you say amateur, that's
ham radio, just yeah. Good old-fashioned ham radio, analog. But there's also some other really great tools that they have. They can communicate in digital format. They can communicate in short distances, long distances, and so that group is really the cornerstone of how we communicate when all other means fail. And our amateur radio unit was out there supporting the Cascade Half Marathon last weekend. That they've been doing it for over 20 years. So we have folks that really spend a significant amount of their time helping us to be prepared. And that community involvement and volunteerism is such an important part of all things we do. And I can't say enough about how much I appreciate our amateur radio volunteers. We also have radios that are backup emergency radios we've distributed out. And that's a growing network. Mm-hmm. We have our community emergency response teams that are now, I'm proud to say, present in every city in Marion County, and certainly a strong team program in Salem. We've provided them radios, and mm-hmm. their
those
mission,
are like walkie-talkies.
They're more than really walkie-talkies. Yeah. We're talking mobile radios, about 50 watts, and they can communicate. We practice once a month actually with those radios. They're in neat little plastic cases, yeah. and the teams can communicate all the way into the County Emergency Operations Center using those radios.
And all so, right, well, we're going to have to take a break, and we're going to come back. We're talking to Ed Flick. He's the emergency manager for Marion County. We're going to listen to his advice on what we should do to prepare, what we should have on hand to prepare, where we can get it, and all that good stuff. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. In our studio today, we're talking to Ed Flick, emergency manager for Marion County, and we're talking about the kinds of events he is tasked with preparing the county for, both in terms of the county services, the county employees and operations, but also citizens. It's huge, and we're only going to have time to talk about the highlights, that kind of the top of the hill here in terms of big catastrophes, the Cascadia earthquake event we anticipate having in the Willamette Valley, and also floods, and but it comes down to ice storms and droughts and terrorism, actually, as well. That's a big ticket. Anyway, we were talking before the break about what you can do and what you should do. Honestly, sometimes I look at areas of the country with a wee bit of a judgmental eye, and it's like, didn't you have, like, a bunch of warning about that tornado? Or that, don't you live in hurricane area and you didn't have any plywood? Any of them. You know, what things that we should do to prepare. And we're told over and over again, but how many of us actually have it? So we're going to ask Ed, what should we have? What's essential? And actually, where are some of the places that you recommend where you get them? Right? So what's in our kit? I know that some people sell, like, barrels. That's an entire barrel of emergency preparedness kit that you can keep in your garage or in your shed or what have you, right? And there's packs. There's, you know, go packs, you call them. And what should we have?
I guess to frame that answer, here's how I look at it. Going back to some of the training I had in the Army, you should think about what would you need in the first minute. In the first hour, the first day, the first week. And you need layered approach, right? What do you have on your person, or what do you have on your car? Because the reality is, if an earthquake strikes, you may or may not be at home. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing that I think about is communication. So I personally carry around probably more communication than most people would, but I have a lot of people I'd have to talk to in an emergency, but just even something simple like an extra battery for your cell phone. It's also really important to have some cash on hand, right, that you can make do for the first day in case the ATM doesn't work.
I'm in huge trouble.
Okay. My wife will laugh at me, actually, when she hears this, because she'll point to the three times I wasn't ready. And that, which goes to the point. You can have all the stuff, but if you build it once and don't maintain it, you have to constantly update it. What FEMA talks about is creating a culture of preparedness. So the real cornerstone of individual preparedness, though, is what do you have at home? And we advocate you need 2 weeks. The national messaging is usually 72 hours because, frankly, even if a hurricane happens, You take the streets themselves aren't broken. You just got to get all the junk off them. In Oregon, it's not going to be that way in an earthquake. So we say you need 2 weeks of water, food. You got to think about your medication. You know, what do you need to get yourself through that 2 weeks? And then I usually have about a 3-day supply of stuff in my vehicle. And then at least I've got something on my person. You know, some food, water. Think about water purification. Water's heavy, you know, so water filters are really valuable tools. Shelter, you know, having a light jacket with you. If you think about what would happen if in a typical, you know, Oregon winter day, if your car didn't start and you had to walk home, what would you want with you to make that walk home?
Mm. Oh, that's a good analogy. That is a good plan. You were mentioning FEMA before the show. You said something that's probably will always stick with me now. You said that preparedness, our individual preparedness, is the cornerstone of emergency management, right? That's the cornerstone, is our individual preparedness. And that FEMA is absolutely not a first responder.
No, they're not.
They are. We've got ourselves, and then we've got our local helpers and our local jurisdictions and your departments and the city departments and the first responders.
It can take FEMA 2-3 days to get to you, right? I mean, with the say there's a big earthquake or whatever and the roads are out, it's going to take FEMA a while to get to anybody, right?
Yeah.
Well, even the first responders.
That's true. And one of the things is disasters begin and end locally. And what you do before the disaster is really going to inform how much you can support yourself when it happens. You can't get ready afterwards. FEMA, if you just look back over the last couple of years in our nation, there's been really challenging times. And FEMA's sure. been spread thin, and the whole federal team. FEMA doesn't do it alone at the national level, just like we don't do it alone at the local level. The federal response is important, and we're going to really depend on them in a cascade event. But the first people in, actually our citizens are the first responder. They're mm-hmm. the first responder, and it goes back to what we teach in community emergency response team training, right? You take care of yourself, you take care of your own home, and then you start checking in on your neighbors, right? And that's the first response, right? From right. there, then we're going to have to get ourselves engaged, and our partnerships at the local level are going to be important. I'll tell you, I've looked at this. I don't think we're going to receive outside assistance in a Cascadia earthquake for at least 2 weeks. I tell everybody that, and that's just the reality.
Nice. All right, so wow. Ed just mentioned Citizens Emergency Response Team. And if you're not familiar with CERT, is the acronym. You said all the cities in our area have it, right? Have a program or counties. You can take a series of classes and get CERT certified, mm-hmm. right? Citizens Emergency Response Team. You get to learn a little bit about fire suppression, a little bit about first aid, a little bit about how to go door to door, how to communicate. And then you're organized a little bit on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis and able to be that first responder you're talking about. So individual house, take care of your neighborhood and the communications and a really valuable asset to people.
Sure.
And one thing Ed said before, and this is Ed Flick, emergency manager of Marin County. One thing he said before the show is, we would like for emergency responders to focus on the most vulnerable population.
Sure.
So if we're able-bodied and we've prepared, that's people they don't have to worry about.
That's right.
So big lesson and big responsibility on our shoulders to make sure that they can get to people who need medication, who need transportation, that need some help. That
well, it would
provide.
Be the injured, right? Mostly the injured and the fragile. Yeah.
All right, boy. Segment's going by real fast. Is there a website or some place where you'd send people if they say, "Hey, I'm going to buy myself an emergency preparedness kit for the house, for the farm, for the fill in the blank"? Where would you recommend people look to, or is that easily found if you ask Uncle Google?
I'll tell you, there's a lot of resources out there. One of the great ones is, I'm gonna promote a local partner first.
Awesome.
The Statesman Journal partnered with us and other folks like Salem Health and SEDCOR and Red Cross. A couple years ago, we did the Think Big campaign. And what we did is laid out the steps to get a preparedness kit together following the Red Cross advice over the course of a year, right? And Carol Curry over there just did a great job of breaking that down into actionable steps. And that content lives outside their firewall. And I would encourage people to go there first.
Okay, we're going to break. That is an excellent point. And by the way, go there now because you can't prepare after the fact. No? No, he says keep going.
Yeah, you got a couple more
All
minutes.
Right, awesome. Yeah. Good, we'll stick with this. Yeah, and you know what else we're probably not going to have after the fact? We may not have internet, so we can't go check that out
right?
the fact.
Yeah.
So,
well, like you said, you can't prepare after the fact.
All right, so my bad, but Dave says you can go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you. So Statesman Journal, SEDCOR, et cetera,
Red
partners
Cross.
In the community.
So go to the –
to get prepared.
Go to the, you know, Google Think Big and Statesman Journal. You'll see that. Red Cross has got some great resources. You need to look, though, because some places in the country say 72 hours. That doesn't work for us. We got to think 2 weeks.
That's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water, and it could be water filtration, but it is a lot of water, right?
Sure.
And Another great place to look, though, you go to the Oregon Emergency Management website. So the state agency mm-hmm. website has a new design, and I think there's a lot of great content there. And then finally, ready.gov. So FEMA has, I really think, a lot of really great content there. And, you know, you can depend on that stuff as being vetted. And then it doesn't promote, in government, we don't promote brand names, obviously, but there's a lot of commercial suppliers out there and folks that have put together kits.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, it's not stuff, a lot of stuff you have to buy, because like most Oregonians, I'm prepared to go out on a camping trip or hunting trip, and I've got a lot of the stuff that I would need. So it's also not just having it, but it's how you store it, right? Having it available in a way that you can get to it and make use of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say the first step is see what the experts advise, think 2 weeks, and then just do an inventory in your own home. And I know one thing that we do in my house is we just make sure that we have extra canned goods and we have extra dry goods and things that we use on a regular basis, and we just make sure we have more of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not something that's just preparing for that day. And if you have kit and you only think you're going to use it during the earthquake and you don't know how it works, and that's not the time to read the instructions either.
No.
All right. Now we're going to break. We're going to come back and talk about infrastructure, though, because mobility will be critical. And I think those of us driving around the Willamette Valley do not count how many bridges we drive across in the course of a day, over how many bridges, over how many creeks. And it's not just the I-5 bridge, and it's just not the Marion and Center Street bridges. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about the airfield and how that's going to play a critical part. We'll be right back. We're talking to Ed Flick on KYKN 1430. Salem is listening.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Thank you, and welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. Ed Flick is our guest today on this fabulous Willamette Valley Day as we talk about emergency preparedness and his task of being the emergency manager of Marion County. And most counties have a person in his role, but they vary a lot in size
sure.
and amount of resources.
Yeah.
And we're somewhat fortunate that we have Ed and that his he's probably had more resources than some of the smaller counties and more rural counties have.
Yeah. We were just talking off the air about water. And like you just said, you can live without food, you can live without shelter, but you can't live without water. And like most settlers, they followed the rivers and the streams when they were making that trek. And so what happens, how much water do you need in an emergency for a plan for 2 weeks?
The rule of thumb is 1 gallon per person per day. But if you think about what you need to use water for, in particular hygiene, mm-hmm. it's so important to keep yourself healthy. I really think it's 2 or 3 gallons a day, and that's a lot of water. That's physically a lot of water. Not everybody's going to be able to do that. So I think it's important to have a mixture of water, and packaged bottled water is your first resource. You can buy barrels that you can put water in. Some people have systems that harvest rainwater off their roofs that you would subsequently mm-hmm. probably need to filter. But having filtration and a combination of filtration, bottled, and then bulk water is important. And then water is something that occasionally we have sometimes even too much of.
Right. When it rains a lot. Yeah.
So there's surface water. Just back to our frontier roots, right? Understanding the field craft of how to survive in that kind of environment is important.
All right. So we were talking before the break about, we did talk about communication and that you're preparing to communicate with the cross jurisdictions and the volunteers. But infrastructure is something that I think we take for granted during the course of our day and how many times we cross rivers. We've upgraded a number of bridges through the Straits and Bridges Bond Fund from that issuance from starting in 2008. And actually before that we had some federal dollars to upgrade some bridges. However, there's a lot more that yeah. are not upgraded. And
well, even in the upgraded ones, in a major earthquake, I don't think they would actually survive.
Yeah, there's and so you're going to need a route home that may not involve your car. And I love what you said. You said, think in terms of what you need in the first minute And then what do you need in the first hour, in the first day? You know, the first minute, you might need a bandage.
You're making me think too hard, right? Ed.
And the first day, there's communications and loved ones and and shelter. And anyway, great advice. Appreciate it. So, but we won't be able to drive everywhere we want to drive. There'll be traffic issues, right? And there will be a need to get goods and services and people and emergency responders in and out of the airfield. And, across the Willamette, one of our favorite topics. So, give us a quick thought on, do we have enough ability to cross the Willamette in a case of that kind of emergency need?
Today? Yeah. No, we don't.
Because really we're looking at Albany to the south and Newburgh to the north without having any height restrictions if something happens to the downtown bridges.
We need to be able to get supplies across that river, and that ability doesn't exist today. And I think that the getting a reliable means to get across, and if that means a new bridge or whatever, I think it's really important from an emergency management point of view that we can support our citizens in the region. We're only going to have the ability to open a few airports, and we're working hard with FEMA right now to figure out how we can make Salem more useful to be a place where supplies would arrive. We need to be able to get those supplies across the river in a way that's going to support the citizens that live on that side of the river in Polk County.
More ferries?
Wow.
I think it's going to be a combination of ferries. It's going to be private boats. It's going to be any which way we can. Sure. We have a couple of ferries in the county system, as you know. We look at how we can put generators on those. But it's more than just the ferry itself. It's also the approaches and what they may look like. It's going to take a number of different private and public efforts to do that. And then I use the metaphor of islands a lot. You know, we're going to wake up after Cascadia, or we're going to see islands. We're going to be on islands because there's a lot of bridges like you talked about. We're also going to have liquefaction and landslides. And so we spend a lot of time trying to anticipate where those islands would be, who's on those islands and what resources are there, and then organize those most local of responses, right? That's a big part of having community emergency response teams and also partnerships with communities to plan that first local effort that's going to take us through the first week or so, right? We'll start putting those islands together and Salem will open. In the federal plan, Redmond is probably the first big place that we'll see supplies come into. And then we want to get Salem Airfield as open as quickly as possible. And then we're working with the cities and we're working with ODOT and the county public works to, we've identified what we think the lifeline routes are. And we want to get those first points of distribution out, right? There's a lot of people that work in Salem that live in Mount Angel or Woodburn or some other place. We want to get them home, right? We need to get them back so they can get their kids out of the school and they can get to that two-week kit, and then we'll sustain them there. We're in conversations now with cities like Staten and Woodburn and Silverton about hosting these points of distribution, right? And then working with our private partners that we're going to depend on to clear those routes and make those emergency repairs, right? FEMA can't do any of that work for us now. That's our responsibility.
Sure.
Okay. Wow. So the airfield, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Ed, is that I don't think people realize that your job exists, nor all the work that is continually going on. And you mentioned it during the break that your job exists. There are people preparing for this. We're not just sitting back and waiting for it and then screaming with our hair on fire. But there's a group that's working about on the airfield, right, for aviation emergency preparedness. That's already in motion. And one of the things you mentioned that surprised me, and I need to get one of these maps, is the maps that you think of routes you think will still be viable after an event like this, right, in case of a flood or the Cascadia event. And, of course, we won't be able to pull it down off the internet, potentially. We can't just grab our smartphone and know how do we get home and which bridges are going to be compromised. That is terrible. How many bridges do you think there are in the county that would be compromised in the case of a quake like that? Or even an incredible deluge and flood?
Well, first of all, I appreciate it's more than just earthquake. But one point I'd make, getting ready for the earthquake helps us be prepared for almost anything else. The reality is we don't know enough about how the bridges will perform. We know their date of construction, and we know the type of structures that are there, and we know generally how those will perform. We've got work to do, though, to do the actual engineering assessments and make sure we're making the best and right investments, like you mentioned Salem's been doing over the years. We do repair and replace bridges. That happens. And I think this is an important point. We need our lifeline infrastructure to be resilient, and that's transportation, communications, energy, and water. Now, the great benefit of those investments from a public perspective is that infrastructure has a return on investment every day. And the county's taking a position in favor of the third bridge, so I can speak on that. We need that bridge in the event of the emergency, and that's within my professional scope. As a citizen, I'd also like to be able to get across the bridge or get over the other side. My parents live in West Salem. I'd like to get there more often. So would they like to see me more often.
In a timely manner.
So if we make our systems resilient, they're going to be better systems every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for the earthquake.
So transportation, communication, energy, and water. So you're a proponent of all of us having an emergency generator?
I think that if you can, it's a great investment. Generators run on fuel. We're spending a lot of time figuring out how do we get the fuel that we have after the earthquake to the people that need it the most. You know, that means making sure that the generators that control the climate in the nursing homes are on. That means ensuring that the equipment that's clearing the roads, both public and private, has the fuel that it needs, right? That means that our emergency operations centers and hospitals are energized. So we have a process where we're inventorying all of those potential energy customers, and we're working very closely with the Oregon Department of Energy now on an energy assurance plan to have a plan for Cascadia to keep the right things on and then to restore the marketplace as quickly as we can.
Wow. Okay, so
I can't imagine the damage.
Oh yeah,
of something like that,
and how long it'll take to recover?
Right,
I mean, 2 weeks is
construction.
Nothing compared
construction to. Vehicles and bulldozers and things like that would also be a big help, obviously.
All right, so let's go back to the airport. Does the airport have the infrastructure that we need? I know that there's a fire station out there, and the runway is about a mile long. Does it have what it takes to get the, say, a C-130 of supplies to land there?
In a word, it does. The McNary Field is a tremendous community resource, and we're very fortunate to have it. And under the city's stewardship, it's just a great resource. There's some investments, I think, that would be useful to make that field more useful in an emergency. We need to look at some of the backup power issues out there. We need to make sure there's a plan for communications. We've had a lot of conversations with the city of Salem and the airfield and our partners there on how we would get it into operation as soon as possible.
All right. We're going to break again one more time. We're going to come back and finish talking to Ed Flick, the emergency manager for Marion County. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back again to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, as usual, with you every noon hour on the weekdays. We're talking about emergencies in Marion County and how you cannot get ready after it happens.
True fact.
In the studio, Ed Flick, the emergency manager for Marion County. A lot of good information coming out. I want to repeat, you can look for this Think Big program that through a number of community partners, including the Statesman Journal. So Google that. Also ready.gov. Also, Oregon Emergency Management. You can find these things on the internet and try to get all that information downloaded and saved somewhere where you don't need electricity to get to it.
Right. Print it out.
And do your own. The best thing we can do for our entire community to serve them is to be ready ourselves. So Ed was talking about all the different kinds of emergency. We've been focused a lot on flood and on the earthquake and the Cascadia event, which will happen.
There could be a fire, too.
But it could be fire. The ice storms can be devastating.
Ice storm?
That prohibit distribution of goods and services and emergency responders. We're also talking about man-made disasters, either terrorism kinds of things or all sorts of things.
Do you have an emergency kit, Brett?
Do I?
Yeah.
I will tell you that every one of my cars has an emergency kit.
Oh, well,
and
good.
We have a very healthy first aid kit in our house. But we could do more. So what should everybody have? We're talking about that, Ed, right? And we're gonna lessen people right here. So they need a first aid kit, right? In each vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he says yes. And in the home?
In the home.
And we need water and a way to filter water. And we need what else? We need blankets. Think in terms
first
of blankets
aid
and
kit.
Shelter.
Yeah.
Blankets, first aid, you know.
Food supplies.
If you have a pet, please think about your pets, you know. So food for yourself and your pets.
Because you don't want your pet to become food.
Well, you don't want your pet to become food. And a lot of people, you know, they're very reluctant even to evacuate if they can't bring their pet with them. And so I say that as a dog owner. I wouldn't want to leave my pets at home, but I want to care for them. Think about your medications. Really think about what you need to sustain your health, right? And a lot of people are dependent on a regular prescription, and there's various ways you can go about building up a stockpile of that responsibly. I think that what you'd want to have on a weekend camping trip is a good place to start. You know, this is not foreign to us. You know,
right.
we get out and we do this stuff. It's really about realizing that we're going to be living in that condition, and you want to be as comfortable as you can. I spent 24 years in the Army, and I spent a lot of time in conditions that were not all that comfortable, but you learn how to make yourself comfortable. You know, I like to have a multi-fuel stove. I really like to be able to, you know, water's good. Warm water with tea is better. Coffee is something that I think about. So those things that there's the things you need, the things you want. And,
a sleeping bag and a tent nearby this emergency kit would also be helpful.
Bag, tent, lantern, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like you're camping.
Two challenges. One, everybody should think in terms of spending an entire day without having energy, any sort of energy, and not having internet access or cellular phone access.
Right.
And what would that look like? And I loved Ed's example of, you need to get out of your car right now and walk home. And it's raining heavily, or it's snowy and it's icy. What are you going to want with you in the car?
Right.
That is a good preparedness
lesson. A jacket and water, right?
So that's the first challenge in terms of preparing yourself and thinking of those terms. And the second one is, hey, how can you help the community? And that CERT, Citizens Emergency Response Team, I was telling Ed that I actually completed about half of the courses with my son, and then we got schedule conflicts and so forth. And so I did not finish, and now I live in a different community, and I need to finish. But those would be great to have more CERT members and throughout the community.
Yeah, I think you need to have a kit, and you need to have some training, right? And basic first aid, CPR, BLS, basic life support, you know. Being able to do those things. CERT is a wonderful 21-hour curriculum, and it gives you the confidence to understand how you should do things, and it also allows you to help others. You know, a lot of this is about how communities at the local level, that block, that street, are gonna pull together. So I'd also encourage you to think about getting to know your neighbors and knowing who's gonna need help and who has what resource, right? And we have a formal program that if you contact my office, you know, we have a website, Facebook, Twitter, we talk about map your neighborhood, and it's exactly that. It's who in your street, who in your little block of houses is going to need help, because there's those people that are vulnerable and you're in the best position to know them, and then they trust you. But I want to circle back on one other important element of what you should have. Think about your vital records. Think about those things that are unique, so financial documents, information, medical records, those kind of things. You can either save those in
the cloud.
A cloud somewhere, right? Have copies of them, have them in a safe deposit box, because time will pass. The present emergency will fade, and then it's going to be, we're going to be in the business of recovery, right? And you're going to want to know your insurance information. You're going to want to have an inventory of things that were in your home, you know. Those kind of things are important. So you're able to participate in that individual assistance and get yourself financially back in order.
Well, thank you, Ed. That is very good advice. I know a number of attorneys, especially estate planning attorneys, they advise that you use a paid service. And if you can put it in a Google Docs if you need to, and it's free, right?
Right.
Or something similar. Sorry, I don't want to promote Google, but
right.
they already know everything about us. But you can have them all locked. So when you need to go to the hospital and identify yourself and have the a medical power of attorney to make decisions for your spouse, that can be pulled out of the records and things like that. All of those things, very, very good advice in terms of having your registrations, for everything from your life insurance to the registration of the car to your health insurance, but of course, the legal capacity to make decisions for your loved ones, right? So that's really, really good advice.
So after I clean the house this weekend, I'm going to photograph everything I have in my house.
That is not a bad idea.
It's a good idea.
And you got to upload it.
Upload it to my Dropbox, and I'll be good.
I've had a house fire and trying to document everything that was lost and how much
knock
you paid
on wood,
for it.
I have not.
So. Oh boy, yeah.
All right, Ed. So how let's end with a little bit of sensationalism. We got 2 minutes, so. We're trying to talk pragmatically and make sure. Now we're scaring everybody. And, oh, by the way, since you're listening, now you can go home and say, honey, we need to go to the store and buy more camping equipment.
Yeah, right.
You just got licensed. I heard on the radio today that I really need a new stove.
There's a big upside to this. There really is, you know.
It's like permission to bust this stuff into your budget. So, go.
I've got a whole bunch of it, but it's in a storage unit off-site.
Well, so you got to get out and practice with that stuff, you know. You got to make it fun. And that's the most important thing. I mean, I say talk a lot about individual preparedness. Know that your institutions, public and private, are working hard in quietly in the background to become more prepared from a community perspective. We need to make some really thoughtful decisions about our infrastructure investment, but this is not something you should be afraid of. Every place in the country has some hazard. We have to be understanding to be responsible for ours here, but
how bad could this earthquake be?
This could be, quoting from the governor's proclamation, recognizing Cascadia is, I think, coming out later this month. It could be the most significant natural disaster in American history.
Wow.
I'm pausing for that. Most significant natural disaster. Until Yellowstone explodes and the entire caldera, what we know as Yellowstone, and Wyoming sinks into the earth, Cascadia is number two. Wow, the most significant natural disaster.
Mount St. Helens.
Bigger than Mount St. Helens.
And certainly bigger than San Francisco quake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is going to rock our world.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Be prepared.
There's a lot. And, you know, like we can't live in fear every day. We don't promote that, but we do promote being ready. Ed Flick, thank you for being with us on Newsmakers. This is 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hey, Brent.
Yeah.
2 seconds. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.